Bow chicka bow bow.
Guess what this episode is about? I mean, it is the final episode in season one of Birth Happens, and the theme for the season is intimacy. So if you're thinking it's going to be about sex, then you, my friend, are correct. There are a lot of mixed messages out there about sex postpartum. Actually, that's not true. There's only one message with slightly different branding. Once you have a kid, your sex life will be over. Your sex life ends the moment the baby makes their entrance. Hope you had fun trying to get pregnant, because you'll never be doing that again. But what if I told you that it doesn't have to be this way? What if I told you that your sex life could actually be better after babies than it was when you first started dating one another? Would you believe me? Stick around to find out more.
Bow chicka bow bow.
It's episode 6 on Birth Happens.
Welcome. My name is Barb Buckner Suarez. For over 2 decades, I've worked as a childbirth educator and a couples coach, helping thousands of families say yes to parenting. I've got some thoughts about how life changes when we choose to become parents. Those thoughts may be irreverent, funny, or countercultural at times, but I promise you, they will always be real. Whether you're curious about starting a family, in the middle of your 4th pregnancy, or your birthing days are long over, raising the next generation is hard, and all of us could use a little more support. I want this to be a place where you can find that support. Because let's face it, birth happens.
This might be the episode you listen to with your honey, y'all. It's my very strong belief that all parents should be having way more orgasms than they currently are. I'm not sure if there's an actual study that's been done about the number of orgasms that parents have versus those who don't have any kiddos. I'm going to have to look that up and report back. But really, that's neither here nor there. Because my belief remains strong and true. All parents should be having way more orgasms, period. Why? Can you tell me of a quicker, more enjoyable stress buster? And if you haven't gotten the memo yet, parenting is one of life's most enjoyable but stressful events ever. There's a lot to be said about finding ways to lessen that stress, and this one tops my list to feel better as an individual and closer as a couple. But if you're listening to this and thinking to yourself, our sex life is in the toilet and has been since the kiddo showed up on the scene, you're not alone. So don't feel badly about that. I'll spell out all the reasons a change in sex life can happen on the other side of having a baby. But you better believe I'm here to give you a roadmap to help you find your way back to yourself and one another. Sex is one of my all-time favorite topics to cover in my classes with expectant families because, one, they don't even know they already have set expectations about it, and two, they all want to know more, but none of them will ask. So without further ado, here's my take on sex after the baby arrives. But even if you're not pregnant or newly parenting, listen up. I swear there will be at least one tip in here you can take away to improve your sex life, no matter if your babies are all grown up or even if you've never had a baby before. All the books written so far about pregnancy, birth, and babies say newly postpartum folks should wait until 6 weeks after birth before engaging in sexual intercourse. This has become the set expectation for way too many couples. How do I know? I ask. How long do the books tell you to wait to have sex again after the baby is born? What follows is a chorus of voices echoing throughout the classroom. 6 weeks, 6 weeks, 6 weeks. When more than half the room answers this way, which always happens, I know I need to set some more realistic expectations about postpartum sex. Now, to be sure, there are some folks for whom the 6-week waiting period will be difficult. They're feeling randy, riding the waves of those lovely oxytocin hormones even before that first postpartum visit with their provider. But it's not very common to feel that way. A lot of pregnant folks read about the 6-week waiting period before they have a baby and think, That feels like an awfully long time to me. I'm sure I'll be ready for sex by then. But due to lots of different factors that they can't predict before the baby is born, that 6-week mark might come and go, and they're not feeling ready at all. But if the only information these new parents have heard is 6 weeks, the set expectation can become that they're supposed to get back at it, ready or not, by 6 weeks. And this can lead to much bigger issues as the couple transitions to becoming a family. Sexual desire postpartum varies from person to person, but I find that newly postpartum birthing folks have lots of outlets to talk about this topic. But their partners? Not so much. And if we're talking specifically about new dads, maybe not at all. For a lot of men, not all of them, mind you, when they find the person they're wanting to spend the rest of their life with, what they do in the bedroom stops being a topic of conversation with their buddies. So if they're not resuming their sex life by 6 weeks postpartum, which might be the only information they have on this topic, then they might think there's something wrong with their relationship if that 6-week mark comes and goes with nothing to show for it in the bedroom. They might feel as if the baby has gotten between them, that the baby has changed everything. Most of the time, this is simply not true. In fact, watching their partner be tender and vulnerable in their new role of parenting their child can actually be a real turn-on for a lot of new postpartum parents. But that doesn't mean that they're ready to have sex just yet. Why? A lot of practical reasons, like they might not feel all that sexy as a new parent. No matter how much weight they put on during pregnancy, when they leave the hospital, they're likely to look about 6 months pregnant, only now their belly isn't tight and firm, it's super jiggly. And their breasts, while impressively larger than they were before, are now being used for a completely different purpose. They might be off limits in terms of their sexuality, at least for a little while. They are exhausted. Y'all, they're so exhausted. And when weighed on a scale of sex versus sleep, sleep will always win. Always. They might be terrified that having sex again is going to hurt like hell. And for a lot of folks, it might. For those that don't feel a lot of pain with sex, it still might take a while for it to feel good again. Breastfeeding can cause vaginal dryness, so some sort of lubrication will be necessary. And remember, they just pushed a pretty large something out of their vagina. Putting anything back inside that vagina can be scary for new parents. They might be worried about getting pregnant again. Note, breastfeeding is not a form of birth control, and you're always fertile before you know you're fertile. So don't mess around with this one. Make sure that you have an idea about how you plan on preventing a pregnancy, unless you want to have your babies pretty close together. They might be having a hard time reconciling their sexy self with their new parent self. Can those two roles even coincide with one another? Do your parents still have sex? Why did you make me think about that? You can see the dilemma here. They're having a harder time concentrating and might find it difficult to let go. The stress of being fully responsible for another human being's life weighs heavy on a new postpartum parent. While they might be able to rely on you as their partner and co-parent, it's their body that's in full recovery mode and trying to make the food that's necessary for their baby to live. It's kind of a big deal. And they worry about this stuff a lot more than you think they do. Maybe their sense of self-esteem and self-worth has taken a little hit now that they're a full-time parent, even if it's only for their maternity leave. They're grappling with this new identity in ways that conflict with what the world says is the picture of success. Does the work they're doing now as the primary caregiver have as much value as the work they did in their office just weeks before? They might have no libido, zero, zilch, nada. And while this has to do with shifting hormones, and it will resolve itself after some time,
this can be a tremendous blow to the person who had a really nice, healthy sex appetite before their baby was born. Stick with me, folks, because I swear this ends on a much more positive note and includes some thoughts about how to make your sex life better in the short and long term. But how about a little sexy music break? As I was saying, there are many factors that conspire to make postpartum sex a little bit tricky to initiate. But the good news is there's only one thing necessary to return to having a loving, lasting, and healthy sexual relationship: direct, open, and honest communication. When you see your provider for that standard 6-week postpartum visit, be prepared to talk with them about your sexuality. Nothing should be off limits. This can feel awkward at first, but remember, your provider has studied for years about pregnancy, birth, and postpartum. They're considered experts in the care of postpartum folks during this transition. Anything you feel might be of concern to you, bring it up. Don't be shy. They've heard it all before, I promise you. Whatever your concerns, they're most likely to be temporary and will resolve over time. But the anxiety of not knowing this can become a bigger deal than it needs to be. I'm a huge fan of paying to hear these experts say the 3 little words that can make you feel so much better. That's completely normal. If at any point you don't feel like your provider is taking your concerns seriously, or their responses feel less than helpful, fire them. And then do a little legwork to find those professionals in your area who specialize in helping new parents navigate the emotional and physical postpartum experience. If, at the end of the 6-week appointment with your provider, you've stopped bleeding and your physical healing is complete, you're probably going to get the green light for having sex. You've been examined, and it's been determined that you are physically ready for sex. But now you need to weigh that information with whether you're feeling emotionally ready for sex. Have you ever heard this joke? Sex is like pizza. Even bad pizza is still pretty good pizza. I emphatically disagree. Sex, good sex, rarely just involves the physical. I mean, there is something to be said about really just going at it. But if you think about it, the best sex you've ever had in your life might have involved, but was not dependent upon, a gorgeous and romantic location, a crazy position, or the addition of some kinky sex toys. Good sex usually occurs when there's a trusting, loving relationship established between you and your partner. Better sex happens when you feel safe and accepted for who you are. Great sex happens when you're able to see and be seen by your beloved. Great sex involves a level of intimacy and vulnerability that allows the two of you to become one, physically and emotionally. It can't happen if one of you isn't feeling emotionally ready. It can't happen when you're feeling guilted into it. It can't happen when you're just trying to soothe someone else's sexual frustration. It can't happen when one of you feels resentment. Sex being one more thing on your to-do list of how you serve others and not yourself. Sex post-baby absolutely has the potential to be so much better than it ever was before your baby arrived. The reason is because you're about to reveal to one another a level of tenderness and vulnerability that even you don't know about yourself. It's through that window of openness that you can begin to cultivate a new, more intimate and connected relationship, both inside and outside of the bedroom. But communication is the key. If you're not feeling ready, either one of you, you need to express this to your partner while reassuring them that it has nothing to do with your desire or love for them as a person. Too many partners take the new parent's lack of desire for sex as a lack of desire for them, as if the baby has somehow taken their place. Now, postpartum parents can often be quick to respond, "That's ridiculous." But before you start telling your partner to grow up, the baby needs me, think about how you might feel if you were in your partner's shoes. If your partner was the sole source of food and most often the source of comfort for your newborn, you might feel more than just a little bit left out. So it's possible, and I would add normal, that your partner might be feeling a bit on the outside of this new little dyad you've got going on. It can be lonely out there sometimes. As the partner, it's important to remember that they might be all touched out by the end of the day. They might want their body to be theirs and theirs alone. They're likely to feel overwhelmed by trying to meet their newborn's needs and get showered before 4 p.m. The thought of adding some sexy time into the day may not even be on their radar. It's helpful sometimes to share your individual perspectives to understand where the other one's coming from when it comes to sex, or anything else for that matter. Perspective taking is challenging, but it makes you a much more thoughtful person, and this alone is a very big turn-on and can go a long way toward creating a much more mutually satisfying relationship. But here's the real deal. For most folks postpartum, it takes a while longer than it did before baby for our bodies to feel desire. And this can be a big mismatch from our partners. Your partner might catch a glimpse of you before you jump into the shower and think, "Let's do this." But you're already on the hamster wheel in your mind, calculating all the things that need to get done today. And sex is the last thing on your mind. Partners hear this. If you're willing to wait until the timing is right, and it might end up being early morning now instead of nighttime, postpartum parents are battling end-of-the-day exhaustion levels, remember? If you're willing to engage the biggest sex organ in their body, their brain, you just might get somewhere. And this mismatch in your sex drive can be minimized. Here's the part that applies to all couples, not just those who are new to parenting. Yep. The biggest sex organ for a postpartum person, in my opinion, is their brain. It's that whole brain-body connection that I can't stop talking about. For someone in the postpartum period to be able to truly let go, they need to feel safe. They need to be able to trust and allow themselves to be vulnerable. And even if you're the love of their life, that doesn't happen just because you're lying next to one another in bed. It's rare for a postpartum person to switch their desire on like you would a light bulb. They might require a little more prep work. Think about what goes into lighting a fire instead. So, engage them in conversation. It doesn't have to be about profound or romantic things. Discussing with each other how the day has gone and really listening to one another, no electronic devices nearby to distract you, goes a lot farther than you'd think in terms of creating connection. If you notice that they've had a particularly rough day, offer to take charge of the bedtime routine or do the dishes so they can sit down with a glass of wine or take a bath and relax a little bit. If they can ease out of parent mode and let some of the day's stressors go, they'll be much more responsive to you. Even after all these positive steps towards setting the mood for some loving, they might not want to go there. But they just might. How do you know? Ask. I think when it comes to sex, partners are too often silent, groping and hoping that if you touch them in just the right way under the sheets, they might be ready to go. Instead of this blind attempt with the potential of rejection without explanation, ask them if they're up for messing around. Most folks can gauge whether they can be persuaded. If it's a solid no, then y'all, it's not going to happen. But it will help your partner and your relationship if you can articulate why you're not into it at this time. "I don't think it's happening tonight. I'm fill in the blank. Too tired, too worked up about my day tomorrow, still upset about the conversation I had with my mom, angry about the comment you made to me last night," etc. This isn't necessarily an easy thing to do, but direct, honest communication needs to happen for real connection to occur. If they are in the mood, they'll let you know, with or without words, hubba hubba, and they'll appreciate that you asked. But here's the clincher that might lead to better and more sex for you both. If you're on the fence about whether you feel up for having some sexy time, let your partner know that too by saying, I'm not really sure, but I might be able to be persuaded. And then partners, do your best to persuade them. Extra time spent catching their body and brain up to one another can make all the difference in terms of having sex. They might really want, they might really need to have an orgasm. But unless their desire can fully manifest, the sex you might have will end up being one-sided, not mutually beneficial, and therefore won't happen nearly as often as you'd like. If you do take these considerations into account, however, you might find that your sex life post-baby can be even stronger and more satisfying than it ever was before the baby arrived. Last comment to all new or experienced parents out there. Make the orgasm your new best friend. Every time you have one, it's like going to the spa for a mini massage. It's one of the best ways to release tension throughout your entire body. Plus, your brain gets flooded with that love and bonding hormone, oxytocin. Ultimately, with a healthy and satisfying sex life, you'll experience less stress and more connection with your partner. Your sex life postpartum may not be the most important aspect of your relationship, but it does deserve a lot of attention. You need to take care of it and nurture it with at least as much attention as you shower on your baby. When that happens, both your baby and your relationship will thrive. And if that 6-week visit has come and gone and you didn't speak up, schedule an appointment today. There's no expiration date for taking care of your own sexuality and improving your sex life. Get up, get up, get up, get up. Let's make love tonight. Wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up, 'cause you do it right. My new mama's group in my early years of mothering was a diverse collection of women from all over the city. We were 10 first-time mamas that gathered weekly for a couple of hours for some much-needed support for the hard work of mothering. This group of live and local mamas differed from each other in lots of ways, but our kids were close enough in age that we could ask questions and get answers on the topics that mattered most to us at the time. What does mastitis feel like? When are y'all going to introduce solids? Has your baby rolled over yet? Are you guys having sex? It was that last question that I was most interested in after having my first baby. I was young and had a healthy sex drive before my daughter was born, but after, I felt like when it came to sex, I could take it or leave it. I was worried that I'd never have a sex drive again, and it was so helpful to hear from other mamas that I wasn't the only one who felt this way. Flash forward a year or so after our group had formed, and imagine us all dressed up for a dinner party, without children or our partners. We'd looked forward to this for weeks, an adult gathering where we could have cocktails instead of our usual caffeine, and actual conversations uninterrupted by having to trail after a toddler, wipe a butt, or scoop up a wailing baby. I remember grabbing a glass of wine and coming back from the kitchen to a chorus of, I know, it's the same in our house too. That's all he wants, all the time. The question that caused all the commotion was, how much sex are you guys having? I swear if we had it twice a week, he'd want it 3 times a week. I said, wait a minute. Are you guys actually mad that your partners want to have sex with you? Am I missing something? I'm not exactly back to my pre-pregnant figure just yet, and he still finds me really hot and wants to have sex all the time. Shouldn't we be happy about that? The discussion that followed made me realize that it wasn't that they weren't into having sex. It's just that the sex they'd been having wasn't the right kind of sex now that they were mamas. We've all had good sex and bad sex before, and the two are nothing alike. Life is short,
and no one should believe that bad sex is just what happens after you've had a baby. I'm going to tell you a few things that you might not consider that can take your so-so sex life post-baby and turn it into potentially the best sex of your life. Number one, don't believe the hype. Everyone tells you that after you have a baby, your sex life will never be the same, and for the most part, they're right. But don't believe all the hype. It's true that you probably won't have as many opportunities to engage in late-night trysts or sleep-in sex. Why? Because you have a baby now, and sleep sounds really good if your little one still gets up in the middle of the night. And waking at 8 a.m. for some sexy time, then sleeping in until noon, will probably only happen on those occasions when you leave your baby for a weekend getaway while grandma and grandpa are in town. Just because your sex life will be different doesn't necessarily mean that it won't be good. In fact, I'll bet that it could be better than ever before, but first you'll have to reject the cultural myth on this point and believe that something else is possible. Number two, make sure to schedule a pelvic floor physical therapy appointment. No matter how your baby came into this world, your pelvis bore a lot of extra weight during your pregnancy, and if you had a vaginal birth, or if there was an episiotomy or tearing of the vaginal tissues, there's likely a need for a professional assessment. But even if you had a cesarean or had no need for any stitches after birth, everyone can benefit from pelvic floor therapy. This can go a very long way in increasing your sexual pleasure postpartum, and it really should be something that every postpartum mama does for herself within that fourth trimester, the first 12 weeks postpartum, if at all possible. This idea is starting to gain traction, but there are still those who believe that if there's pain or numbness or things just feel different down there, that this is just what happens after you have a baby. But that doesn't have to be true for you. There's a lot that can be done to help you heal properly and make your post-baby sex life more comfortable and enjoyable. Please go get yourself checked out. Number three, get really clear with how you communicate about sex. You need to be able to tell your partner what feels good and what doesn't. What's off limits, breasts as an example for a lot of nursing mamas, and what's fair play. Do you only want to make out, cuddle on the couch, or are you ready for the full Monty? Being clear in your communication does more than set boundaries for yourself and your partner. It has the potential to really spice things up in the bedroom. If you haven't been very directive in your sexual relationship up to this point, letting your partner know what you like and what works for you will lead to better sex for both of you. Remember, the goal in a loving relationship is for everyone to enjoy the sex they're having. Even if it's working for you, it's not as satisfying when you know your partner's not enjoying themselves, or you feel like they're doing this out of a sense of duty. Number four. Sexual organs for new parents are pretty different. You might be thinking to yourself, what are you talking about? But after having a baby, it's not all about the vagina. Actually, it's probably never been all about the vagina, but now that you've given birth, what I'm getting at can best be described through this impromptu dramatic scene. Fade in. New parents in the bathroom together, brushing their teeth in preparation for going to sleep. Partner, their mouth full of toothpaste. You look so hot in that nightie. Damn. Newly postpartum parent, totally frazzled, not paying any attention, spits into the sink and whisper yells, shh, did you just hear the baby? Was that the baby waking up? Fade out and scene. As a postpartum parent, the brain is on high alert all the damn time. They are neurobiologically programmed to free up most of their brain to pay close to full attention to their newborn so they don't die. It's a really great system for the continuation of the species, but it sucks when it comes to doing the thing that's necessary for creating the species in the first place. If their brain can't settle down long enough for them to be in the moment, not thinking about what they've got planned on the calendar the next day, or worried about that weird rash on the baby's butt, or feeling self-conscious about their jiggly bits, there's no way in hell they're going to be able to locate an orgasm. It just isn't going to happen. And that's a big bummer. But all is not lost, my friends. I love the brain. I think it's super rad that it does so many things behind the scenes to keep us alive. But let's face it, sometimes you just wish it would shut up so that you could stop processing all the things and get onto the good stuff, like orgasms and such. As a new parent,
they're going to need your help, partners, in turning their brain off so that their body can get turned on. So how do you do that? Check in with them throughout the day via a quick phone call or a text exchange. Make sure to give them a hug or a kiss before you say hello to the baby. Let them know by the questions you ask that you genuinely care about how their day has gone. Sometimes the best processing can be done earlier in the day or even during dinner, and then they're not thinking about it when you head off to bed. Meaningful conversation is a new parent's greatest aphrodisiac, for reals. Number 5. Don't forget that sensuality is a basic human need. Without touch, we die. Maybe as the partner, you've gotten the message, returning to having sex at 6 weeks postpartum is not the norm for most new families. You're being patient and letting them lead the way on this one. You've decided you can wait until they're ready, both physically and emotionally. But there's this weird thing happening to you. Not only are you not having any sex, you're not getting touched at all. You can't even remember the last time the two of you kissed or even held hands. When partners are interviewed about postpartum sex, or lack thereof, it's the physical intimacy of touch that they miss more than the sex itself. Sensuality is an important human need. If children are denied physical touch, even if given food and water, they'll die. All of us need to have that physical connection to others on a regular basis, and too many partners go without it in the postpartum period. Why does it happen? Because too many postpartum parents are over-concerned about sending mixed messages. We've been raised to hate the idea of being a tease. So what do? We stop giving our partners kisses. We stop grabbing their butt as they walk by. We sit 3 feet away from them on the couch when we're watching a movie together. All to avoid having an honest, real, and vulnerable discussion about not being ready, about our worries that sex might hurt, about not loving our postpartum bodies, about things feeling different than they did before. To have the best sex of your lives, you need to do more than acknowledge your feelings of vulnerability around this topic of postpartum sex. You need to embrace them. If you can be open and honest and vulnerable with one another, this creates intimacy. Intimacy leads to trust, which leads to feeling safe and secure in your relationship with one another. This leads to a desire to be with one another and share in each other's lives, which leads to thoughtfulness, an incredibly sexy thing to new parents, by the way. This leads to deeper emotional connection, which leads to physical connection, which can lead to some of the best sex of your life. So here's the recap. Don't buy into the hype. Your sex life will be different, but it helps if you believe it can be even better. Make an appointment early on with a pelvic floor PT. Having a professional assess that you are healing properly can make a huge difference. We want sex to be pleasurable, so we need to make sure we've done all that we can to make that happen. Let's talk about sex, baby. Get clear in your communication about sex. If you're not ready, say so, but make sure to explain why. Set clear boundaries about what you want and don't want, and until you're ready to get back at it, be very clear on what your physical touch means so that your partner knows what to expect and how to respond. Turn off your brain so you can turn on your body. Make sure to have meaningful conversations about your day-to-day with your partner so that you feel connected and on the same page. This makes it easier to get warmed up in the bedroom. Increase the amount of time put in for warming things up. Their desire is no longer a sparked match. It's more like the beginnings of a campfire. It needs kindling and attention for the flames to finally ignite. If there's more foreplay, you'll have more and better sex. Period. Sex after babies is different than it was before, but it can be so much better and mean so much more when you focus on building intimacy through vulnerability.
Roberto.
Yes.
We are going to remember that we have four children in the world who might be horrified by this episode.
They might be horrified by this upcoming conversation.
So we're going to keep it maybe PG level.
Not just for the sake of our children, but exactly. For the sake of your audience.
Please. Okay. Yeah. But I just want to acknowledge that our kids in various levels are slightly horrified that we still actually have a relationship in this way. But anyway, yes. That being said, I have a couple of questions for you, and I would love to get your take on it and hear what you have to say. So based on what I've actually recorded for this episode, I would claim that having some of the mental load, so that intense amount of work that oftentimes goes straight along in the maternal brain of the person who's given birth to the baby, it's just there. And it is this emotional and physical focused and concentration about the baby, especially in the immediate postpartum time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Almost to the exclusion of everything else. So I want to ask you this first. Thinking back to our first kiddo, in that immediate post time, would you be able to identify at all what it felt like, or did you feel pushed aside, or maybe a little left out, or did you feel like I was able to kind of even, I believe that I probably was not super sensitive to you at that time, I would imagine.
Yeah, but first of all, I think we were both exhausted at the time too.
Well, yeah.
I mean, so I think what I remember from that time is being so focused on the baby and kind of tied to that, focused on you and your recovery, that I don't know that there was a lot of time for me to think about my specific needs.
Well, and I guess, I mean, there is a lot to be said about the testosterone levels of partners drops in the immediate postpartum. So the first 6 weeks or so, that would have been like a protective thing. We're all just like really focused on the baby and the whole thing. But at some point it came back.
Sure.
And it had not come back for me yet.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about what the reality of that was like for you. Because I remember it, from my perspective, it was really hard.
Mm-hmm.
Because watching you parent our baby was one of the most phenomenally sexy things in the world. Because you were so tender and loving and vulnerable and everything. And I still was not ready to actually engage in anything sexual with you. That was hard.
It was hard. And it took some time. I mean, part of it was, you know, the specifics of the birth yeah. had an impact mm-hmm. on your body that yeah. we knew you were not very comfortable. Mm-hmm. You were not feeling particularly sexy about mm-hmm. how you looked and how you felt. So, I mean, there was a lot of that going into it. I think for me, I had to do my own kind of growing up during that time in a way, because I felt that, you know, it was kind of a lesson for me to learn not to, be kind of expecting those things or being selfish at that time. I mean, even though there may have been a libido that wanted to have a little bit more at that time, there was also that recognition. I mean, it's kind of like that part of growing up, kind of that part of accepting that, you know, now that we've made the choice to be parents, it's not like we won't get to that place again sometime in the future. Granted, we didn't know that at the time, but I think it was more about allowing the process to kind of happen, kind of evolve normally.
It took a while, though. I remember actually going to the, I mean, we'd been having sex at this point, but I remember probably at the year mark, I want to say that Elisa was probably a year, and I went to the provider, and even though we'd been having sex for a while, I just wasn't very into it. I didn't have much of a sex drive. And I remember saying to her, it wasn't Lisa. Lisa had moved away. And so I had this new provider, right?
And she didn't have kids. I can see her face perfectly. Young woman. And I said to her, God, I'm in this place where, I mean, I could take it or leave it. Like, I have zero sex drive. And she looked straight at me and said, yeah, I heard that could happen to people. And I left the appointment and went out to the car and started crying because I thought, oh my God, this can't be it. And so just so everybody knows, that's not what it was.
That's
it
not
did
it.
Come back, but I didn't
but
have
you didn't
validation.
Know any better at that time. So at that point you thought, wow, could this be the rest of it moving forward, right?
It was terrible, actually.
And I think for my part, I mean, again, not to get too graphic here with you, but I was always kind of a horn dog. So it did take a little bit of maturing. Well, and to understand that intimacy can come in other ways as well, that it's not just about the sexual piece. But I mean, I remember, you just trying to explore new ways of being with one another that didn't necessarily, I mean, part of it had to do with being able to go on a date again or being able to watch a movie again, you know? Remember there was a movie theater where you could bring babies and
have
a cry
room? Oh my gosh.
And the moment we could do that, we would do that, you know? Like, it was part of kind of rediscovering intimacy through other ways.
Yeah, I get that. It was
But it was a hard lesson.
Oh yeah.
It was a hard lesson because, I mean, yeah, definitely I felt rejected. I felt... Yeah. But again, it feels kind of selfish to put it this way, but it felt like, oh, I'm not being given my due kind of thing, even though I'm like, that's kind of unfair. I mean,
well, but the thing is though, I mean, and correct me if you think that this is incorrect, but I think for a lot of partners, the, emotional connection is very deeply tied to the physical connection. And so when the physical connection is not there, it has to be put aside for some reason, it feels like the emotional connection is also gone.
Well, and especially when I tend to be a very physical love language kind of person, and that ties into validation, and that ties into am I still, attractive to you? I mean, all those things kind of get roped into it, right? Yeah. So if the physical piece in my mind is kind of the gateway to all those other parts, to the intimacy, to the being wanted, to feeling desired by your partner, then it feels like a domino effect, right? Oh, her libido is not in the same place as mine, or,
it's not for the practical reasons. It's because she doesn't love me. She doesn't desire me. She doesn't whatever. Right.
Right.
And I think that part is really hard because when the maternal brain is really fixated on like, no, the primacy of what I'm supposed to pay attention to is the physical and emotional well-being of this newborn. Literally, if you were to have come to me, and I don't know that we were able to actually voice it in this way, but even if you had at that time come to me and said, hey, I'm feeling really left out, or I feel really like, I know this sounds weird, but I'm a little jealous of the baby. I think I would have looked at you and been like, oh my God.
Right.
Like, grow up or like figure it out or whatever. And that feels really harsh. Mm-hmm. I can look back on it now and be like, wow, if the roles were reversed, I mean, I would feel really sad and left out and I would have those same feelings. But I think the piece that we're able to weather through that storm is that we were able to get back together physically. And over time, we were able to kind of like build that whole emotional intimacy back in.
Right.
Which I would say is the key to the sex being good, is the emotional intimacy.
Yeah, I mean, if there's one thing you learn through that process, is that it has way less to do with the physical and more to do with where you are, in the depth of your relationship and as a couple and in understanding one another and in validating one another and in supporting one another. All of those things play into it way more.
So I'm gonna bring it back into the original question, which is, would you say, even over time, because we've been together for a long time now, that movement towards trying to take some of that stuff, the mental, emotional stuff off of my plate, would you say that contributes to a positive sexual relationship between the two of us?
I think so. I mean, I would definitely think so. I don't know that at the time I was capable of taking that mental load off of you. I mean, the circumstances are so different then. But if you learn one thing then, is that then over time, if you're able to kind of make it through that obstacle course, that is, you know, that time of adapting to becoming a parent and to kind of learning how our roles are changing. They're not different necessarily, but they're growing in a new way.
Yeah.
Then that, I think, helps inform how to then make your relationship stronger down the road, because you understand, hey, these are the kinds of things that I can be doing, the ways that I can be expressing myself, the ways that I can be supporting you that help to take some of that load off. Right at the time when you had a baby, you can try to take as much of the load off as you want, and it still probably might not be enough.
Yes, yes.
Right?
Yes, yeah.
But it's a good time to learn and to appreciate that is something that down the road can really help.
But it's also a good time for the person who's given birth to really actually recognize that having to ask your partner to do something is not the same as having to manage them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's a big, big thing out there like, God, why do I have to ask him? Shouldn't he or they know what I need them to do? And there's a part of me that's like, I really understand that deep desire to be like, they should just know. And then there's also this point where I'm like, but do they read my mind? Because I don't think you've ever been able to read my mind, dude. I mean, like.
But it's funny because that also goes hand in hand with sexual maturity.
Yeah.
When it comes to sexual maturity, a lot of people are like, oh, I don't want my partner to tell me what I need to do to satisfy them because I should know.
Uh-huh.
When in reality, as you kind of evolve and you get to learn more about each other and you deepen your relationship, you realize, no, if this person wants me to be able to be there in a way that satisfies them, you know, through intimacy, of course I want them to let me know what is it that they, you know, prefer or not prefer.
Yeah.
So it's interesting how that kind of ties hand in hand there. You can't expect your partner to magically know what you need in that postpartum world.
Yeah.
You can't expect what your partner needs in intimacy, in the bedroom, and when it comes to sexual intimacy.
There's also that piece too. At least I believe that this is true, that on the other side of having a baby, because of that whole maternal mind connection, and it's really not something that we should be disparaging. We should be really thrilled that we actually have it. I mean, it is probably the reason why we have succeeded as a species over time, right? We have someone that's dedicated to making sure that the baby's emotional, physical needs are being met. But it does mean that my body being able to kind of like catch up to the thought of having sex, it's going to take a little while longer.
It is.
I joke about how it's before I might have been a gas stove, where you just light the pilot, right? The pilot light.
Yeah.
And on the other side, I'm an electric stove. Mm-hmm. So you turn it on to high, and it's like, well, it's going to get there eventually.
One of those glass top ones, too.
So without being, like, super obnoxious, like, it sounds like you would agree with the idea of, like, there might be a little bit more need for foreplay.
Yeah, but then, again, that also goes with the learning process. It's about, you know, it's about becoming an expert in your partner, you know, becoming an expert of knowing, okay, you know, it takes time and it takes working at something to develop a skill. And when you realize, okay, to be the best partner that I can be to you, whether it's in an intimate setting or not, you have to learn about that person. And the more you learn, the more you're able to then kind of adapt to that. And, you know, it could be that what you learn is exactly that, hey, it takes a little bit longer, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. And there are ways in which we can turn this into a positive experience for the both of us. Mm-hmm. You know, and hand in hand with that, you expect that gets reciprocated as well, right? Yeah. I mean, that's an experience and an opportunity for you to get to know me better and to get to know, you know, what buttons to press when it comes to my own, you know, preferences when it comes to intimacy and sexuality and all that stuff.
I love how we're trying to, like, dance around.
Did you see how I danced around?
So that our kids are not like, oh my God. La, 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 la. Oh, it's going to be horrible. We've done such a good job, but it's going to be horrible. Okay, last question. what would you say about our sex life 25 years in and 4 kids later in comparison to when we first got started?
I mean,
I'm putting you on the spot, but
you're putting me on the spot.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's not like our sex life has, I mean, obviously it's been we grow as people, we grow, we mature, you know, we learn over time. There's an excitement and an energy to being young and in love and having sex at that time that you kind of reminisce about it and you think of it, you know, and like these amazing, you know, your memory plays tricks on you, right? And it's just like, yeah, oh, that was amazing that one time we were, you know, in the car somewhere up in the mountains or whatever. But the reality is that nothing beats having the experience of getting to know your partner through going through difficult stuff, through facing challenges together, through learning to trust one another, through learning to be vulnerable with that person. Those are the things that build up to me to a stronger and much more fulfilling sex life.
Yeah.
And I would say, and I think, you know, I think we say this every night that we partake in the act of lovemaking, for lack of a better, but I think I say to you, you know, it really does feel like as we've grown and gotten to know each other better, it just keeps getting better. But it's not about the physical stuff or the gymnastics or the tricks. It comes back to the, I mean, you've said it to me multiple times that a woman's largest sexual organ is the brain. And that's what it is. You need to be willing to continue to grow and challenge each other as a couple, to continue to want to learn more about this person, to be curious about your partner.
Yeah.
I mean, without that foundation, without that friendship, without that love, without that that ongoing appreciation and ability to learn new things about one another, all of that other stuff, I think, is meaningless. No matter how good physically it may feel.
It lacks
that part, you know, being able to truly give of yourself to another person and to be vulnerable with that other person.
I think of it this way. The opportunity to be able to see and be seen by one other person and spend your whole life, literally your whole life, trying to have each iteration of whoever you are as you're becoming to be seen and to be beloved is such a gift, but it is not one to take it for granted. I think that, I mean, both of us, one of the other reasons why I think we're able to say that sex is still good after all these years is that we work at it. Like, it's not something that we take for granted at all.
And it's not about, you know, exploring new ways of doing things, right? I told you the other day, I read that article that said, you know, what happens when, I was just curious. I wasn't reading the article because I felt I needed to. I read the article because
it was clickbait.
Well, because the headline triggered me to think, okay, are they going to talk about the mind stuff, which is what Barb would talk about? Yeah, you know, are they going to talk about the brain stuff? No, it was all about how to spice things up in bed. And like, at no point here are they talking about, are you taking the time to get to know your partner?
Yeah.
Are you taking the time to, you know, show support?
Yeah.
Are you taking the time to show interest in what they're interested in?
Yeah. Well, I hope that, you know, because I make claims a lot in my classes that we have this great relationship. And I wanted to have other people actually hear your perspective so that they didn't think it was just me making those claims. I really appreciate you coming on to actually talk about it. And I really am super grateful and feel lucky that you and I have what we have after 25 years. And
I know. And it'll keep on going.
It'll keep on going. I hope that's a hopeful message for y'all. Sex can be better. I promise you.
Yeah, when I talk about sex in my classes, there's usually a combination of embarrassed laughter and stunned silence. It's like everybody's been transported back to middle school health class, and they cannot believe that Ms. Buckner-Suarez actually has sex, let alone is going to spend an entire class period talking about it. Listen, you don't get to 25 years of a happy couple relationship if your sex life is in the crapper. But just like any other aspect of your relationship, you have to work at it. If it's been a while for you, or right now you're still navigating the newly postpartum time and you're just not feeling ready yet, that's okay. I hope that both you and your partner can feel a sense of relief that if your sex life is not what it was pre-baby, that this is normal and that you're not alone. So excuse me for saying so. I want you to focus on taking baby steps back to yourself and one another. Make sure that you've addressed any concerns that you might have about your body and your recovery with your provider and other professionals so you're feeling in the best physical shape, sexually speaking. Once you've been given the green light, I want you to explore your new postpartum body yourself. Go back to the body love meditation from episode 1 and make peace with your incredible body, being grateful for all that it has sacrificed to bring your baby into the world. Then believe your partner when they tell you that they still find you attractive, even if, maybe especially if, you're not feeling all that in the moment. Take some time to figure out what feels good in this new body of yours, and then share those details with your partner. Set clear boundaries about what kind of physical touch or sexual intimacy you're ready for, and stop thinking that there's a timeline that you must follow. Every couple is different. Take it slow at first. You might find that setting a date on the calendar where you'll both sleep naked without the pressure of actually having sex, so you can both remember what it's like to be sensual beings, even if you are somebody's parent now. Be ready to utter or hear the words, "Let's just get this over with," at some point, knowing that the postpartum person might just feel like it's time. Make sure that you inebriate and lubricate. I'm joking about the inebriate part, but know that anxiety and inhibitions might be high that first time back. I'm not joking about lubrication. Vaginal dryness is a thing on the other side of having a baby, especially if the parent is breastfeeding, so make sure to buy the good stuff in large quantities. Get ready for it to not be the best sex of your lives, y'all. But if you both have an orgasm, get ready to be sprayed with a little milk. Letdown happens when oxytocin is released, so a sense of humor and maybe some nursing pads might be in an order. Listen, there are all sorts of reasons why there's a delay to having physical sexual intimacy after the baby's birth, but rarely are they because y'all don't love one another. Make a commitment to having open, honest communication about sex and everything else, and see what happens to that sex life of yours. I know how vulnerable this can make you. But y'all, if parenting were an emotion, it would be vulnerability. But we'll get into that subject next season. I hope you look forward to each episode of Season 1 of Birth Happens as much as I look forward to creating them. I started this podcast with a few goals. To make sure that expecting and new parents know that the work of raising the next generation is the most important work that they'll ever do. And that connection is everything, and it begins with birth. If these messages resonate with you, please share the Birth Happens podcast with anyone you know on their parenting journey. It's been so great to connect in this way with the people I love most. Pregnant and parenting families. Y'all are my heroes. Season 2 of Birth Happens is in the works. The release date should be happening in mid-April. If you want to be the first to know when Season 2 is launched, please subscribe to the podcast at birthhappens.com or head over to my website at bbsuarez.com and subscribe to my newsletter for the most up-to-date information. I'd love to hear from you personally about your favorite episodes from Season 1 or what you'd like me to address in future seasons. Be well, and we'll connect soon on Birth Happens. Wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up. Let's make love tonight. Get up, get up, get up, get up. 'Cause you do it right. Baby, I can't understand it. I want... That's not how it goes.